Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, Cheeky Monkeys. We are hosting a live screening of Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery, at the Golden Age Cinema on August 16th at 8:30 p.m. And that is all the information.
Please come along. The tickets are almost sold out. And I do want to correct, when we say live screening, it is not a performance.
We are going to be playing every character in front of the screen while the movie plays, like The Room or
come along,
Rocky Horror
Picture Show. Along to all your favorite songs from Austin Powers.
Da-da-da-da-da.
Yes, we are screening the 20th anniversary of Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery at the Golden Age Cinema on Wednesday night, August 16th.
8:30 p.m. It is a Sydney-only event, but guess what? Melbourne babies, Canberra babies, Perth babies, Brisbane babies, and wherever you are across this great land, if you want us to screen it in your hometown, organise everything and we'll do it.
Demand it.
Yeah, because so far we will go anywhere for Austin. We'll go anywhere for our babies.
We'll go to Austin.
But we need help. Yeah, we'll go to Austin. We're doing South by Southwest.
We're doing
to screen
the 30th anniversary screening of Austin Powers International Man of Mystery is happening at South by Southwest.
If we can make this happen for the 30th anniversary, I swear to God, I'll give each and every one of you a smooch anywhere you want.
Okay, good night.
Bye.
It's my check. It's my check. The podcast by Mike Myers.
And we're clear. Hello, horny babies. Hello, Waniacs. Hello, Daniacs. Hello, cheeky monkeys.
Oh, hello.
Welcome to Mike Check with Cameron James and Alexi Teleopoulos, the only podcast to traverse the entire works of Mike Myers just to check if it's still shagadelic.
And who is Mike Myers for those that are uninitiated?
Oh, one word. He's a funny man.
Yeah, he's a funny man.
He's a funny man. Two words. Comedic actor.
Three words.
Really groovy dude. Yep. If you're listening to this for the first time, this is a show where we go through everything that Mike Myers is involved in. It'll be it film, TV, book.
The written words.
Live performance, webisodes. I'm Cameron James, and the other guy you're hearing is Alexi Toliopoulos. How are you, Lex?
Very groovy baby.
And we have a special guest.
We do indeed. We're joined by one of our dear friends. You know him from content. It's Ben Jenkins. Hello, Ben Jenkins. How are you?
Put
thanks for joining us.
On my tombstone.
Yeah. And can I just say, on behalf of everyone at the Mic Check Republic, congrats on all the content.
Thank you. That means a lot.
You're making some great stuff. Free to a Good Home, great podcast.
Sure, thank you. We've just started making that again.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
It's funny stuff, good content.
Thank you. And I'd like to thank you for letting me wear this official Spy Who Shagged Me hat.
That's right. This is a mic check first. For the first time ever, we've let a guest wear one of the iconic hats.
And as we all know, the rules are, once the crown doth sit upon my head, you are actually part of the Mic Check Republic.
Welcome,
one
so
of the
welcome,
leaders.
Brother.
Thank you. Can I just say that it's a beautiful day outside.
It is
it's
wonderful.
It's that kind of tail end of winter crispness where just sitting in a park and you can read for hours and not overheat. Oh. And you absolute fuckwits have made me sit inside and watch A 1.5 hour long movie.
That doesn't even star Mike Myers.
Yeah, that, that is the greatest twist of all, ladies and gentlemen. And that is that this episode, very special episode we've got Ben on for, we're daring to tread outside the Mike Myers cinematic universe, the MMCU. We're going to look at the other British spy franchise, the other iconic British spy franchise.
With a little funny twist.
Yeah.
Not unlike Austin Powers himself.
What would that comedy spy franchise be, Alexi?
It'd be a spy franchise called Jonathan English.
Full title.
Johnny English is daring. Johnny English is dashing.
Agent One, you overestimate your power over women.
I'd say that would be virtually impossible.
Johnny English is dreaming.
English!
Gentlemen.
Agent One.
Hello?
This is Intelligence Headquarters. Remember when I told you the only way you'd become an agent was if all the other agents were dead? Well, put some bloody clothes on and get over here right away.
Thank you, sir. You're
unbelievable. Yes, we were inspired by the brand new news this week that they were going to be making, finally closing up the trilogy of the Johnny English franchise starring Rowan Atkinson, Mr. Bean.
Yep.
And we thought that now it'll be on equal standing with Austin Powers.
Three films apiece.
Three for three.
For running time. Is Austin Powers about a 90-minute-er?
Yeah, it's about 96, I would say.
Yeah, right.
I would say exactly 96 minutes.
What year did Austin Powers come out?
1997.
Who directed it?
Jay Roach.
So, can I just... So, to preface all this...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought I had seen Johnny English.
Yeah.
And I'm still not sure if I had before this, having seen it. Like...
Are you sure if you have now?
Look, that is undeniable, and it's made me furious. but I wasn't. There was so much in it that I didn't remember that I should have remembered.
I think what you remember is seeing posters for Johnny English.
But I do remember Malkovich. I do remember.
Okay. Yeah, I had no memory of Malkovich.
So how do we want to tackle this?
I think
we need to start a whole separate podcast, baby.
I think we got to meet every week to do an hour analysis of this. I think, the way to tackle it is this.
Mm-hmm.
We have to dive in by first discussing our relationships with Rowan Atkinson.
Yes. Okay. He's my stepdad.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, that I didn't know.
So it's complicated. I've got some very complicated emotions.
Should we do a whole separate pod? Should we get into it?
All right, let's do it. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Hoofing Around the Bean with three boys chatting Rowan Atkinson.
We're going right up into it, and we're going to hoof around this bean.
You guys ready for a Chatkinson? Let's do it.
Oh, that's great.
Is it?
Rowan Chatkinson?
Or should I kill myself?
Hey, they're not mutually exclusive. Van Gogh made some amazing art and also killed himself.
That's true. That's true.
You came up with Rowan Chatkinson and the door to that is still open.
So Rowan Atkinson, best known for playing...
Would it be Mr. Bean?
The concierge in Love Actually at the jewelry store.
Which I actually think is a fantastic performance.
Mm,
yeah,
he's wonderful. He's truly one of the great actors, I would say.
There was I read something somewhere that there was an implication in one of the deleted scenes that man was magic.
Yeah, I remember that.
Oh, he was like an angel. He was like a Christmas angel. Yeah.
He was a classic Michael from the John Travolta film Michael.
Or like a Capra character, like the guardian angel in It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life.
I think that's what they were, but then they just cut it out. So like, that would be weird for him.
Mm.
It's like if Ian McKellen just discovered that like Magneto wasn't powerful in a re-edit. Like, he's just an old man. It's like, well, I was sort of playing it as a magic person.
Like, no, you're not magic. Yeah, you're just an old dude in a few scenes.
I think he, my relationship with Rowan Atkinson is complicated because not only is he my stepdad, but I think he has possibly, I mean, maybe Mike Myers is, maybe this is one parallel, the gap between his highs and lows.
Oh, yes.
It is astonishing to me.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Bean is, I think, one of the better pieces of comedy produced in the last half century. Like, I think it's incredible. Yeah.
It's timeless. Very funny stuff.
It will live on, but even within that character, you have the movies, which are notoriously bad.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, so I don't know. Because he also, you know, watching the credits just now, he also didn't have anything to do with the writing of that film at all.
No.
It doesn't seem. And I don't know. Does he just sign on to stuff that, like, he doesn't have creative control, like, or is that the problem?
Well, here's what I read. I read about this just then when we finished watching the movie on IMDb, the Internet Movie Database.
Marvelous website.
You can find out so much knowledge about films.
About
out
films.
There.
Oh, my God.
You can
God.
Find out how long they are, what other a dudes budget. Think of them,
who was in them.
Some little funny little facts.
Yeah, sometimes there's a goofs section. That's a blast. Good.
You can find out if they fucked up making the movie along the way.
So, in the trivia section on the Internet Movie Database, it informed me that this character was based on a character that Rowan Atkinson did for a series of commercials for a credit card in the UK.
What?
And he was a Bond parody then that they then, I guess, spun off into this. He wasn't called John English. He was unnamed, I think.
He had a name that was literally like more a Bond parody, like Jeffrey Bluff or something like that. And then that character continued on with another comic actor in the commercials. But Johnny English is only inspired by the credit card commercials.
However, he also had a sidekick in those commercials named Boff. Who is in these movies as well.
Okay.
That makes sense of that completely pointless character in this film.
Played by Robbie Miller?
No, not played by that dude. Different person. But there you go. It was basically like, I think he probably would have had some creative input in those ads. Mm. Someone would have pitched Rowan Atkinson as a Bond parody. He would have.
Can you imagine how awful that person who pitched that would be?
Yes, I can. Yeah. I've been in many creative agencies, and I know these assholes. They're the worst.
That like kind of brings me to like the first thing I noticed about this film, which is actually really surprising and something I wasn't prepared for. In that, for the fact that it's inspired by this Bond parody, it's billed as a Bond parody. It's kind of like whole reason to be is a Bond parody, and
it's
not
raison d'être, if you will.
Exactly. And despite all these things, it is not a Bond parody in any way.
But the most bizarre thing about this movie is that it is literally written by Purvis and Wade, who are the staff writers of James Bond. They've written everyone since the Pierce Brosnan era.
That is mind-blowing to me.
I think that's the key to this movie in some weird way, and I'm going to try and find a way to unlock it, because why would they do this? I mean, is it just that they had a bunch of gag ideas that they pitched for Pierce Brosnan
movies? Hey, wouldn't it be funny if James Bond walked through a pile of shit? Wouldn't that be funny?
And they were like, not for this, no,
and
not for this film.
And then they look at each other and give the little nod that's like, put that in the other folder.
Yeah, they definitely had. You're absolutely right. They have a folder of ideas. It's like, well, this is obviously too wacky for the MGM stuff. But
we'll wait till we get our hands on our own franchise.
It's just going to be, there is a real, like, this is the teachers putting on a funny play vibe to it. You know what I mean? Like,
it so is.
This and also, like, I think one of the big things that makes this film, that really stands out with this film, is that it doesn't have the contempt for the source material that a parody kind of needs.
Mm.
Yeah.
Or even a love for it.
Yeah.
It seems ambivalent to it.
Like, yeah, it has like a real like workmanlike relationship to it, because that's their job.
Yeah. Well, I mean, down to the director. You were telling me the director of this fucking comedy is the director of Sliding Doors. Like, why not just get a comedy director?
This action comedy.
Is Sliding Doors not a comedy?
It's a dramatic...
I've never seen it, but I always assumed it was like a romantic comedy.
No, it's just a
romantic film.
But it stars the greatest comedian of them all, Gwyneth Paltrow.
It does. her comedy chops are on display in this film. I wonder if it's also like comparing it to like Austin Powers, and I might be jumping ahead here, but like I was talking to somebody recently, maybe even been you, Alexi Toliopoulos, about why Wake and Fright is such a good film.
Yeah.
And it's because it was directed by an outsider.
Yes.
And it was somebody who, like, I think it was a Canadian director who, like...
I'm trying to think. It's the same person that did Rambo 2.
Right. So, yeah, but it's not an Australian. And so they can kind of, like, with an outsider's eye, identify what's interesting. And in this case, horrifying about something that the insiders can't. Whereas like Austin Powers, again, created by a Canadian who's not part of that British world and has that outsider's eye and creates a character that finds things in that Bond universe that you know what I mean? The natives take for granted.
Yeah.
I think that might be part of it.
And also, I think maybe the problem is that because these people are writing Bond, they can't go too hard on Bond.
Yeah, like whether that's like legally or just like...
It's also their day job.
It feels like they had to divorce themselves from... Let's try and identify what Johnny English is before we keep moving further.
Okay.
So Johnny English, it's from the year 2003.
Okay.
It stars Rowan Atkinson as the titular Johnny English.
Yep.
Now, when you say titular...
When I say titular, I don't... Of course, I'm not referring to the pornographic parody of Dracula that stars a big-breasted woman with the fangs coming out of her titties.
That's not what you're talking about.
I did see that you guys had some incredible fan art.
Yeah, we
did. It really has... I can't stop thinking about it.
Yeah.
And I think, honestly, dude, I can't stop looking at it.
There's a real like kind of H.P. Lovecraft, an image that drives a person insane sort of vibe to it.
Well, we understand what that's all about. So it's from 2001. The movie begins with...
No, 2003.
It's a post-9/11 film.
A lot of shit happened in that time.
It's steeped.
Yeah.
It's very much a post-9/11 film.
Yeah, it totally is. Because it's about
There's even a scene with a plane flying close to two Twin Towers.
But the movie begins with a funeral for an agent who died on the job.
Yeah.
And then Johnny English is in charge of the security of the funeral.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the funeral explodes.
Yeah.
Tragically, we never
discover why that funeral exploded.
I think the bad guys put a bomb in the
but we don't know who they were or why they did that.
No, I think it was Mr. Malkovich's fat German friend. who I guess they didn't want the agents around so his coronation could go without a hitch.
Now, I don't know if this is because they didn't want to like... shell out for extras, but like the world of this film suggests there are like 12 agents in all of MI6.
Yeah, that's it. That's all you need.
That's all you need.
12 agents, 12 disciples.
So yeah, the setup is very much King Ralph. Setup to King Ralph.
Yeah.
So everyone dies. Johnny English is like the last agent left alive. So he gets put on a headlining case where he actually is quite a fucking idiot and shouldn't be left with in charge of this. So it's him and one of the agent played by Rob Miller from Worst Week of the Life.
Ben Miller, actually.
Ben Miller. I keep calling
him Rob Miller. Different names. Yeah.
I always get Ben Miller and Rob Brydon confused.
They look so similar.
Always in my mind, they're the same bloke.
I wish it was Rob Brydon.
I wish there was another... like.
I wish this was Coogan and Brydon.
One of you turned to me during the film and were like, this comedy movie has two comedians in it.
Oh, yeah.
That's so weird. And then Natalie Imbruglia
comedian Natalie Imbruglia.
Yeah. She's funny as fuck, dude.
She has so little to do in this movie. It is astonishing. I reckon you could actually edit every scene with her... out like every frame, and it would
be the same movie.
It's the same movie. Yeah,
it's just like if like with Raiders of the Lost Ark, if Indiana Jones never went to find the Ark, the same events would have transpired.
Anyway.
This is the same, but with
Nellie Moore. Compare this to Austin Powers in that sense, Austin Powers has got Groundlings graduates coming out of the bloody wazoo.
Yeah,
this movie has got no Footlights
one
motherfuckers
neighbor's
in it.
Grad.
Yeah, it's got one neighbor's grad. It's got fucking Rowan Atkinson, the titular Bean, and it's also got, what's his name? Ben Miller. Everyone else is a faceless man.
Yeah.
Everyone is an offcut of an actor.
It is incredible. I have not seen a film in so long with so few recognizable people.
We kept saying that the whole way through. We're looking at it's clear that they had people they wanted in mind and they found someone who looked kind of like them.
Yeah.
Like this cunt's James Cromwell. This guy's the fat guy from Pie in the Sky and Harry Potter.
Yeah.
That's a history boy over there.
Yeah. James Corden, blah, blah, blah.
If only James Corden could have been in there just to spice up those car scenes.
But you're
singing along with Rowan Atkinson. That's all I want.
But you're right. Like, that is something that is so great about Austin Powers in that, like, they just get a bunch of incredibly funny people. A lot of them, like, at the peak of their powers.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
Austin Powers.
And just
kind of let them run loose. And
You've got Will Ferrell in the minor roles.
You often forget that.
Exactly.
Mindy Sterling.
Mindy Sterling's so funny as Vern Ralph Abisso.
Vern Troyer. Famous comedian Vern Troyer.
One of the funniest blokes on the planet is Vern Troyer.
But also, like, people who you didn't think were funny, who are allowed to be funny in this film, like Robert Wagner is really funny.
Michael York
accused
is hilarious.
Murderer Robert Wagner.
Yeah, but unfortunately, there is no solid
proof. Tragically, there is no proof. Tragically, the man is allowed to walk free.
That is wild, isn't it? But not only is he a murderer, but he's a murderer of another famous person.
I'm obsessed with it.
This movie couldn't even get a murderer to star in it that we all know. They could have got any murderer that would have been more famous than any of the movies in this. If they got freaking Manson or something in it, Charles Orr. Or Marilyn, either of them.
It's just, it is, so yeah, so sorry, to go back to explaining what it is.
Mm.
So that's the setup. He's a very bad spy indeed.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He is tasked with protecting the crown jewels at one point.
Yeah, that's how it all starts.
And then there is a Frenchman played by John Malkovich.
In
who,
a delicious performance.
It is.
Oh boy, he makes a meal out of that accent. He's just like, hello, it is me,
Jean-Malkovich. Like, yeah. But and I was saying this to you guys, the weird thing is that John Malkovich speaks French completely fluently. Like,
really?
He's in a lot of French movies and TV stuff. Like, he plays Javert in the Depardieu Les Mis. That's all in French. I'm pretty sure. He can speak French. And in my experience, people who can speak French can also do pretty good French accents.
Yeah. It's like...
But he's an actor, my dear boy. He's putting his own twist on it.
He made the choice to make this character be a Frenchman from a cartoon, like from Victor and Hugo or something like that, who is like...
What's Victor and Hugo?
Oh, it was a great...
You don't remember Victor and Hugo?
No, I don't know Victor Hugo.
Comedy. Yeah, well, that's who they were named
by. That's the goof, Alexi.
Mm. Yeah, I get it.
They
funny
were cat
stuff.
Burglars, weren't they, or something?
They were bunglers in crime.
Bunglers in crime, yeah.
Okay.
And they'd just try and steal... But not unlike... I would say they were the crime version of Johnny English.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. They were... The dark side of Johnny English. Yeah.
A modern Asterix and Obelisk.
Kind of.
Do you know who I want to see remake this film?
Oh, who?
Nolan.
Oh, yeah.
I want to see him put a bit
imagine
of a dark
Nolan's
twist on it.
Imagine Nolan's twist on this.
Yeah. He could just make it fucking gritty, dude.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just grit it up.
A real minimal color palette, I reckon.
So then,
Hans Zimmer score.
Yep, absolutely. In keeping with, and this is something.
In keeping with Mum, is that the movie we're going to be talking about? The Rowan Atkinson film.
In keeping with, like, I suppose one thing they do kind of get right about the Bond parody, and it's a very specific kind of Bond film. It's like kind of a Roger Moore Bond film that they're parodying, where it's like the villain's plan is absurd and completely. So basically, Malkovich's plan in this whole film is to become King of England and then using royal powers. Seize all the land in England and turn it into a giant prison.
Yes.
Yeah. A very Escape from New York type plot there.
Yeah. And that's what English foils. I've described basically the entire film, I think.
That's it.
Now, what I think we're lacking, what we're not describing, is that there are many scenes of Johnny English having something embarrassing going on behind him that he doesn't know about, but everyone else can see.
He's trodden into the wrong situation.
He's got the wrong end of the stick.
Oh, my. And I'm talking maybe two or three scenes like that. I reckon maybe 17 or 18.
I would say there is not a single scene in this film where the comic premise is not that.
Yeah. He's confident, but everyone else can see that he's embarrassed.
And he's monologuing very seriously. Yeah. Like, he's got the high ground on everybody.
And people are like in the background being like, oh, no, Johnny, you mustn't.
Turn around. And he's like, no, don't talk over me.
I think you'll find that this isn't the Archbishop at all. Johnny,
it's from everything from the start of the film where he says everything's perfectly safe and then an explosion happens behind him to him standing in front of a hole that he doesn't know about is behind him.
To him revealing the asshole of an archbishop to a televised audience.
To him revealing that the crown jewels are not there anymore.
To him revealing that he's actually at the wrong funeral.
To him becoming the king.
Yes. My God. My God. I mean, like, when you are writing a film, I've never written a film, I'll be honest. I'm not going to pretend I have.
But you should pretend you have. It'll make your point be more truthful.
Because can I say something to you? Yep. Dress for the job you want.
That's true. Exactly. That's
and
true.
I mean that. Okay. So just tell people
so
you
I've
wrote
written
a
bunch
film.
Of films. Okay, yeah. I wrote right. Schindler's List.
One of the great films.
Thank you.
A hilarious film, dude. Thank
you. Well, I'm not entirely sure that you've seen it.
I'm a Holocaust denier.
Good Lord. No, so I've written a couple of films, and it occurs to me that it's interesting that there are three names on this screenplay.
Yep.
And not one of them turned to one of the other two and went, hang on, is this not the same setup as the other 16 times we've done this?
Now, here's an interesting bit of trivia. I'm glad you brought up the screenwriters, right? So two of them, as we know, Purvis and Wade, write for the Bond films. Mm-hmm. They even wrote Spectre, actually. They've
written all of them since Pierce Brosnan.
They've written a lot of them.
They're all co-writers on all of them.
Now, the third writer, who I believe, my theory, is that this person was brought on to do a rewrite.
Mm. Oh, okay. Yep.
This is William Davies. He has co-written a number of films, including 1988's Twins.
Wonderful movie.
Flushed Away, How to Train Your
Flushed
Dragon.
Flushed Away is also a James Bond parody, isn't it, with mice?
Yeah, it is, yeah. How to Train Your Dragon. And
you wrote How to Train Your Dragon, because How to Train Your Dragon was quite good.
Yeah, wonderful movie.
How about
movie.
This one, guys? Puss in Boots.
Oh, my God.
This ties into the Mike Myers cinematic universe.
An upcoming episode of this podcast itself.
So this guy's wow. comedy chops.
Everyone
Twins
in Hollywood is
film.
Just fucking with each other the whole time. Huh?
I reckon you're right. I reckon he was brought in to do rewrites because this doesn't the tone of this film does not gel with the ones that you've just mentioned.
No,
I almost think that Purvis and Wade's job on this film, because they've been seen as kind of people that have ruined the James Bond franchise.
Really?
This is someone I'm talking to someone that's, you know, I may not have written a film, but I've written a few comments
hey, dude,
on
please.
James Bond.
I reckon you should just say you've written
okay.
a film.
Okay, I've written a bunch of
You wrote The Good
movies.
German.
I wrote The Good German.
Again,
I wrote The Good
fucking hilarious, dude.
I wrote The Good Shepherd.
Yeah.
The Good Son.
I've written a lot of good movies, that's what I'm trying to say. But they have a very negative public persona non gratis with a lot of the fans of the
what
James
a great
Bond
mumbled franchise. Metaphor that was.
I mean, they don't the James Bond fans, Bond maniacs, whatever you're going to call them,
Bond heads,
Bondlings, yeah. Bondlings. They're not into them but because I think they've hacked up the franchise.
I would say that they have been behind probably two of the like GoldenEye and Casino Royale. I reckon are probably up there. Yeah. I mean, the other ones have been hot garbage, but...
Well, they've ridden those two. They were the Soul Riders, or two... I mean, they're not Soul, if it's two of them, but...
No, but you can be... The twin
team
Soul.
Was, yeah.
Say, yeah.
They're the team behind Die Another Day, which is famously a stinky piece of shit.
Yeah. But that's like... I don't know. Like, I feel like Bond is one of those properties that people tend to, like, think was a lot better than it was.
Oh, yeah.
There are Bond movies that are... absurdly bad.
Yeah. And there's not one where you're like, wow, that is a masterpiece.
Yeah.
There's not a single one where you're like, that is truly one of the greatest films of all time.
I reckon I've watched every Bond film I've watched, I've come away from it going, the gadgets are cool.
The babes are hot.
The babes are hot. Yep. And Roger Deakins' cinematography is mwah. That's like the main things I
Magnificent.
Can compliment. But this is why I'm a bit confused, because if this guy, this William Davis guy, has some good comedy chops, and they've written this film that has the same comedy set piece for every scene, that is why I think that Rowan Atkinson is the auteur of this film, in that he's come in as the star,
to
as
goof
the slapstick
it up.
King.
Mm-hmm.
He's looked at every scene and gone, you know what? Let's have me fighting no one in this scene. Let's have me nearly stepping into a hole.
I mean, I will say that I've just thought of one setup that actually goes for quite a while, which doesn't involve the situation that we've discussed, which is a scene in the film where he climbs up a pipe, the pipe. is covered in shit and he gets covered in shit.
The pipe is revealed to be a room
tank.
A room in a castle where several men are all shitting at the same time and there's no barricades between them. It's just a room where men are pantsless, reading the paper, shitting down
like
the
in
same
sync.
Pipes.
In sync and they are shitting.
Like, they all get up at exactly the same time.
Oh my God. I remember, I don't mean to brag, guys, but I've traveled overseas.
Really
when
awesome.
When I went to...
Really
last
awesome,
Last time
dude.
I went to New York City.
Okay. Oh, New
City
York City.
City of apples.
Yep.
I went into... I needed to shit.
Okay. Look, as someone who's needed shit in New York before,
you
I feel you. Yeah.
You get it.
This is a very relatable thing.
And I was in
I actually remember doing a shit in a Greek restaurant. I used my language to get on in there.
I was in a park, not the park, but one of the parks.
Yep.
And I ran into the bathroom and it was a room exactly like the one in this movie.
Really?
Where there were no barricades between toilets and there were two or three people shitting in this big room.
Were they going like, hey, I'm shitting here?
And I had like a panic attack and
oh
I couldn't
God,
shit.
Father.
I walked into the room and I froze in my tracks just completely not expecting to see a room full of toilets with three people shitting in front of me.
Which park was this?
One of the ones where you can buy drugs in. Union Square.
Union Square Park.
Yeah. Wow.
So wait, there was just blokes shitting in a room?
Yeah.
That's not abnormal. I always think that's strange where you're like, every office building just has one room where everyone goes to like take their pants off and shit. At least there are barricades there.
Yeah,
and
you hope
that is the bathroom. You do hope that most offices designate that room as the bathroom.
Well, sometimes the CEO's office as a prank.
A lot of people shit on the copier, you know? A lot of people do that.
Christmas parties are wild in my office,
oh, my
dudes.
God. But, yeah, no, so do you think Atkinson came in and went, I want to add some
He'll
stuff
punch,
to this.
He punched up every scene, I reckon.
Yeah.
In the way that, like,
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Who's Clouseau? Who, you know?
Well,
Peter Sellers.
Or Steve Martin.
Steve Martin for the purists.
Both of them.
There.
I think both of them are comedic actors who are physical, and even Mike Myers himself are the kind of people who would come into a thing they didn't write and punch up every scene with their own stuff.
But well, see, that's what we would think of Mike Myers when he does a movie such as
Cat in the Hat.
Cat in the Hat or what's the Planes movie?
View from the top.
A view from the top, where he's like, well, to make this funny, I'm going to go cross-eyed.
I'm going to have a cross-eyed.
And I'm going to go a little bit crazy and yell at them. I'm going to say the line where I say, fly, fly.
Like, they're getting Rowan Atkinson for a reason, because he's Mr. Bean.
Because he's funny.
And I feel like they would have, on set, they would have all just let him do a lot of what he wanted.
But, like, on that, In the very first thing in the movie, he's playing this like kind of suave, debonair guy. And I turned to one of you guys. I was like, it is just so amazing how how this does not speak to any of his comedic skill sets. And you were like, wait a minute. And it was a dream sequence. And then he's revealed to be like this bumbling guy, which is definitely more in the Atkinson wheelhouse. But I would still argue that like that's not his strength at all. Like the thing about Mr. Bean, which is like so funny, is he's so childish and petty.
And nasty.
And nasty, exactly. He's not suave. He's not cool. And he's not even like somebody trying to be that.
Yeah.
So like bumbling isn't I know that to say that Mr. Bean doesn't bumble is
that's controversial.
It's controversial.
Yeah, I mean the boards are gonna get crazy.
But he I wouldn't describe it that way. I just think that this didn't play to his strengths.
No, I don't. That's the thing, because when he's played Blackadder, he's done the kind of like arrogant asshole who's trying to be suave or trying to be
a high
intelligent,
status.
A high status character.
High status.
But this character is not Blackadder or Mr. Bean. He's sort of somewhere in the middle because...
He's Johnny English, darling.
but again, Mr. Bean, I mean, Blackadder, he is surrounded by these footlights grads.
Yeah, true.
Like, he's surrounded by this incredible cast of comedians.
Now, where was Stephen Fry in this movie?
Stephen Fry would be in anything.
Hugh Laurie. What?
Where were either of those guys?
Yeah. Even fucking Baldrick. What's Tony Robinson doing?
He's doing a documentary about World War II or something.
Fucking get him in Johnny English.
Finding some bullets in a fucking field.
Doing. There are other people who can do that who aren't Baldrick.
There's only one Baldrick, yeah. Tone. Get over here. We need you to play Bob.
Get fucking Eric Idle in this movie.
These people.
I mean, as you said, like Cleese. Cleese would have done it. Cleese would have, like, this would have been exactly what John Cleese
was broke.
Cleese
has a divorce to play for. He
Rick
Mayall?
Come on.
On fucking Rick Mayall?
Do you know what? Rick Mayall in the titular character.
Now, when you say titular, just quickly, I need you to...
That would have been a good movie.
Yeah.
No, it wouldn't.
No, but... it wouldn't. It would have been a good movie in the 90s or something, like early 90s, I reckon.
But, yeah, I mean, he would have made it a better movie.
I think it would have been funnier. We would have laughed more, probably.
Yeah. And he's probably not that hard to get in contact with. Just Rick Mayall at rickmayall.com.
Tragically, Alexi, we did lose Rick Mayall last year.
Oh, Alexi, no, that joke is so much better than it deserves to be. Fuck you.
You were thinking about it for, I reckon, a good minute.
I was like, Rick Mayall, that's his name. Okay, let's do something about that. So let's put our own little spin.
So you can't see, but Alexi's eyes did glaze over for 2 minutes.
He is Alexi's famous for his glazed over eyes.
Yeah, this is mouth moving wordlessly.
Just a different variation of the pun. I think the thing that annoyed me about the character of Johnny English was that sometimes he was high status, like Blackadder, and sometimes he was the innocent, like Bean, but there was no consistency between the two.
No.
I would have liked it if he never seemed aware that he was wrong a lot of the time.
So, like, yeah, exactly. That's, like, that's what makes, like, things like Mr. Magoo and, like, to a degree, like, Police Cops or The Naked Gun, which is, like...
Naked Gun, for sure.
They fuck up, but often in fucking up, they actually do...
The right thing,
and they never notice that they're fucked up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Can I swear on this podcast?
Oh, dude, yeah. And, hey, we have started. I'll say that. This is the show, yeah.
Okay. So, like, this had none of... Like, this had the worst of all possible worlds, where, like, he fucked up. He didn't fuck up in an interesting way, and he knew he fucked up, but also he didn't care. Like...
Yeah, he was...
There was no aftermath.
No, that's true.
And there was no real, like there was no real thing was like, why is he doing this? At the start of the movie, there's a tiny dream sequence where it's him being a full agent.
Yeah.
But you never feel the drive like this guy really wants to serve his country
and
well.
And he doesn't grow. He doesn't change. Sorry, about a minute ago, I said Police Cops.
You meant Police Squad.
I meant Police Squad. Mm. And if you edit this mea culpa out, I'm coming for you.
I absolutely promise I will not. Wink.
Wait, why are your fingers all crossed up?
Oh, don't worry about it.
Why are you knocking on wood?
I want to compare it to Austin Powers a little bit now, because that's a spy comedy that is specifically parodying some early Bond, like the Connery era Bond mostly, and
some Roger Moore flair.
Roger Moore in there. Now, what is the difference? Where did one go wrong and one go right in these two?
I think where the Austin Powers goes right and where this goes wrong is Austin Powers pretty much does adhere to the classic Bond structure. You know, there's all these underlings and interesting characters and henchmen, and there's a femme fatale, and then there's a woman on his side and all of those things, and it plays with those tropes.
Yep.
It's about Austin being sexy. But he's sexy out there in the world. That's the other thing.
I mean, like, I would just say as a blanket statement that I think the reason why Austin Powers works well while this doesn't is because the people who made Austin Powers probably thought about it for longer than five fucking minutes.
Yeah, probably.
It's not based on a credit card commercial.
That's not its source material. I would agree with you, Alexi, but I'd also say that I think, like, if you say that every film is basically a what if, every parody, every comedy is basically a comic premise, that the what if of Austin Powers is actually a lot more detailed and thought through.
Yeah.
It's like, what if we applied those kind of tropes and moralities and that kind of character to a 1997 world,
yeah,
and what would that fish out of water look like? What would it be like if someone who was really good at their job then had to be good at their job now? Like, what would that be like?
Yeah.
And the what if of Johnny English is, what if James Bond had brain damage? Yeah. Like,
what if Mr. Bean was a spy?
Yeah. Like, that's kind of all it is. You're not exploring anything, and so like I think part of the like the pathos of Austin Powers, if I can call it that.
It is.
Please. This is a podcast where we discuss Mike Myers as an auteur.
Is just that, like him realizing that he doesn't fit in anymore and the things that he thought were good things about him are bad things. And there's growth. Like,
Oh boy, there's growth.
There's a lot of growth.
Especially in the end with the penis pump.
Exactly.
Gracious me.
But the thing, like, I will say the other thing is like, there are jokes in Austin Powers that are far broader than anything in Johnny English. Like there are jokes in Austin Powers where he literally drinks shit.
Yeah, yes. True.
And that is as broad, possibly broader, than climbing up the shit tube.
And when you,
but it's they're earned.
They are earned.
They are earned. We're like, yes, Austin, you drink that shit. We believe that you could do it. But in Johnny English, it is basically the same joke over and over again. It's him fucking up in front of people, trying not to let on, having to fake his way out of it. His gun fucking up.
Yeah, his gun fucks up in three different ways.
Yes, one, the clip falls out. The other one, the top bit falls off. The last one, shit squirts out of it.
And I remember saying to you when the second thing happened, I was like, how many fucking ways are they going to have to get his gun to fuck up? Yeah. And I will say that as obvious as I felt a lot of that film was, that last one absolutely caught me by surprise.
That's the best. That's maybe the linchpin of this whole movie is that they came up with that one first. And like, we've got to build up to it though, guys. We can't start
rule
with shooting
three,
shit
baby.
Out of a gun.
Rule of three.
I will say that there is a physical gag early on in the film that made... I reckon I probably had three... lols in this film.
We all had a few genuine big laughs.
I think where he goes to throw his jacket on the coat hook and he just swishes it out the window.
That's great.
Was quite funny.
Very funny.
He kills that woman.
Yeah.
The whole scene of him becoming an official spy, we were laughing the entire way through it.
That should have been the tone of the whole movie is him trying to act cool while fucking shit up, never acknowledging that he's fucking shit up. And just being in basic rooms with simple gadgets, hurting people, and trying to cover it up.
Yeah, if that was the whole movie, like...
And it's kind of dark as well because he swaps up... He has to sign his documents to say that he's going to be a full agent. She gives him a pen, and then he sees an elegant pen on the table. He's like, oh, I remember these. We used to have these in the academy or whatever. And with one pinch, it would turn into a dart gun. And then he actually shoots this woman. And then for the rest of the scene, you see her getting with the paramedical assistance in the background. And you're worried that this woman is dead. That's very funny, dark area for this movie to play in.
So like, yeah, exactly. Like that is a great example that I think Austin Powers does really well of like committing to a gag and extending until it's no longer funny. Like
the Will Ferrell being burnt under the desk.
Yes. So it's like, and it's no mistake that film was made by like a lot of improvisers. And that's like one of the core tenets of improvising. It's like, you know, you extend until it's no longer funny and then you advance. Of course, like most
commit
improvisers don't pull up early enough. But like, yeah, that's the kind of thing, right? And like Johnny English, I felt like it would be like, now here's a joke. Okay. Well, here's another joke.
Here's a funny little bit of information for you. And I'm glad you brought up the pen thing, Lex, because in my little very deep analysis that I've done and research on this film on a little website called wikipedia.org. And guys, please donate. Many of the gags from the advertisements made it into the film.
Yeah, that's never a good sign.
Including Johnny English shooting someone with a tranquilizer pen. So that's like, so that would have been an iconic ad.
Credit card humor.
That then made it into a feature film. Yeah. And I reckon a lot of the gags that we see in this are things that would have been in the ads, like the gun falling out and him throwing stuff out the window. That all seems like little quick gags.
They can't have a gun in an ad for a credit card,
dude,
that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
What does the Wikipedia page say? Just the general reception of this film? Because like
reviews were mixed.
Okay.
I reckon Rotten Tomatoes.
33%.
Oh, that's what I would have guessed.
That's rank.
Yeah, that's no good.
Nah, just good on him.
There was a point that I started feeling bad about shitting on this film, and it was when Cam, you kept saying, "Oh, it's a kids' movie." Right? And like,
I kept saying it, but I don't know if it really was, because like, there was some sex shit in it.
Kids deserve better than this. They need to see the full sex scene instead of just kids.
Kids should see Grimsby, for fuck's sake. Yeah, I felt bad too because I started thinking, all right, well, maybe it is for children. I remember I was pretty young when it came out.
Mm.
Maybe this was for people like, you know, 12, 13 years old or whatever. But then...
I remember seeing it on DVD when I was about like 11 years old.
And did you think it was funny?
12. I don't think so. Not really. I think I laughed at a few things, but I reckon it would have been mainly the things I laughed at now.
It's just
the turd scene with 10 men shitting into the same toilet.
I will, like, yeah, I don't know. Like, is there any excuse for a genre parody this bad in a post Austin Powers and indeed post 9/11 world?
When you've got to be fighting for something out there. 9/11
changed the spoof game.
Yeah.
Big time. Big time.
Do you know one of my favorite things in the entire world is baby boomers pronouncing spoof as spoof? And like, oh, it's a marvelous spoof movie.
So, oh, I think I've seen that one. I've seen a few of those spoof movies in my time.
So, yeah.
Why are you winking?
Don't worry about it. I'm just touching wood.
So I think, like, yeah, one of the key differences that we've already identified is mm-hmm. that Austin Powers is in many ways an ensemble movie mm-hmm. With like, well, it's not. I mean,
with the same guy playing two roles.
Yeah, yeah. But it's got an incredible cast
yep.
and a murderer in it, as we've
yeah.
mentioned.
Yeah. Accused.
A murderer
alleged.
And also a convicted rapist with random tasks.
Oh, that's right.
Convicted of rape.
Who was
yeah,
that?
The he was the odd job type character. Yeah.
Was he?
The Hawaiian time. Wrestler dude.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
He's yeah. now in prison serving hard time.
Yeah. Oh. And where he belongs.
And we're trying to get an interview with him on this podcast.
Have you ever been able to reach out to anybody on in the Mike Myers-verse and get an interview?
There's a little feelers out there
there's
at the
a
moment.
Few things
some
around.
Mike Myers.
Okay.
Some fans in Canada have been trying to get us some cool Canadian TV people at the moment.
Right.
They have worked with the great man, Mike Myers.
Yeah.
But we have not heard hide nor hair from Mike himself.
Mm.
And we've tweeted at his character, Tommy Maitland.
Yeah.
Many times to no avail.
Yeah. Do you know what I've just realized? And by the way, I think you say that with a lot of confidence, given that you have no proof that he is Tommy Maitland.
Oh, you have no proof.
Hey, you still got no proof.
I would also say that a key difference in the worlds of Austin Powers and Johnny English is that in Johnny English, it is a world that is ostensibly the same world that we have. In
yes.
It's just this one wacky guy in a world that kind of works the same way.
I mean, it's the same world. They've got funerals there. Yeah. They've got they've got parking tickets.
Yeah, they've got prime ministers.
Yes.
But like everything in the Austin Powers world is kind of up for absurdity.
Yeah.
Like the scene, the security guard, like not jumping out of the way, and then the call to his family, like all that stuff.
It's a cartoon world.
It's a cartoon world, exactly. Yeah. And we're so I just like basically headbutted my pop guard.
Well, I guess maybe now's a good moment to talk about the bean scenes. And these are our favourite moments from this movie.
Mm.
For me, I mean, you've already mentioned the coat being thrown out.
Yeah,
very funny
stuff. That's a funny thing for me. I think the high point for me was still the pen scene with the woman in the background.
Yeah.
That's just a good comedy scene.
Yeah.
I like that. Lex, did you have any?
Well, I can't stop talking about the 10 guys shitting on the toilet at the same time. But I'm not sure if that was a joke or not. I think that was like a thing that was actually in the movie. I would say I did, I greatly enjoyed a scene of physical humor where he has accidentally knocked out someone that, in a scene where there's a blackout and the crown jewels have been stolen and then assailants walking around the room and he accidentally knocks out one of his allies in the mission who we do not see again in the movie.
Nah.
Presumably he did kill him with a candlestick. But then he's like, oh, I think he's gone into this room, and he runs into the room and has to fake fight himself behind the door, throwing objects around and stuff like that.
Yeah, doing the old pretending you're choking yourself thing.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that was very, very funny.
I think that's something that they would have, Roman would have been like, I got an idea for this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Guys, let me run wild.
That very much feels like something that was done on set, given that it made absolutely no sense in terms of the plot.
No, it made no sense. But it was funny. It was a good set piece.
It was good shit, man. That was good shit.
You know what's the weird, right? Mm. You know, in the follow-up to that scene where he's talking to M, basically, and he's like... And M's like...
Pegasus, please.
Pegasus, sorry.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, can you describe the man who...
Oh, yeah, that never came
back. That never came back!
That was a real setup for... It felt like they were going to arrest someone who looked exactly
like
the fake person.
Or just like a background gag. But that never, ever came back.
I think that happened in Spy Hard. I think there was a scene in the Leslie Nielsen movie Spy Hard where he gives a fake description of a criminal and then later you see that
guy with
really crazy
like a paper
person.
Mache head, right?
Yeah, like being arrested.
But that was a bit of a funny scene. That was almost a bean scene that was halfway there.
I think your bar for bean scenes is...
Well, I just love Rowan Atkinson's face. And when they revealed the hideous creation that he described to the artist as being something so bizarre with like clown hair and like scar meeting in the middle of his face, his reveal of like him trying to not give away that it's disturbing was very funny.
Yeah, that's true. And I think also, like, as you said, like a lot of the physical stuff, but also a lot of the face acting that Atkinson brings to it. Like, even just eating something gross.
He serves a lot of face, darling, is what we're saying.
Very good, yes.
Was there a bean scene for you? Something that brought you through it all?
Oh, man. And I'm really trying not to be so negative, but I think they've all been mentioned.
I mean, I don't doubt it.
I think I've got to keep going back to the 10 men shitting. But again, I don't know if that was intentional.
I don't know. That was a joke.
Because again, like, there was so many... So, like... I haven't seen the Austin Powers franchise in quite a while.
They're actually very good.
Okay. But I think I'll come to that event. Is that event still?
Yeah. Next
August
Wednesday.
August 16.
Okay, because I want to see it. I don't want to see it again because I have fond memories. But it feels like there is a gag that they do in Austin Powers and in a couple of other American movies like it where they like really like bell the cat with the setup. They lampshade it. They're like, this is like, I'm going to put this here and this here. And if you confuse them, like you'll drink shit or whatever. And part of the joy is how like, winking that is.
Yeah.
But Johnny English, that's all it does the whole time without any
winking.
And
it's not winking, is it? It's just because it's not played in a way that's like someone over-explaining in an exposition style. It's just we see shots of these two rings. One is truth serum and one is
exactly
a muscle relaxant. And then we go, oh, fuck, he's going to get him confused. And then 10 minutes later, he gets him confused.
So like the only thing that I think could have been a bean scene for me with the 10 guys shitting is if they were kind of leaning into that.
Yeah, which they weren't.
No.
And again, you've got this directed by acclaimed comedy director Pete What's-His-Cunt.
Peter
Allen. who directed the famous comedy Sliding Doors.
Yeah, very funny stuff.
I would have liked to have seen how that's two realities in Sliding Doors. I would have liked to have seen a reality where it's a good movie.
Yeah, imagine the Sliding Doors if we didn't watch Johnny English.
I think one of the other secret ingredients that make Austin Powers such a delicious meal is...
that made me physically ill, what you just did.
Sexualized that. You made a meal out of that. Yeah.
Well, I think one of the secret ingredients is actually Liz Hurley herself as Vanessa Kensington she's a great comedic character in the film because she's kind of like the real kind of grounded character.
Yeah.
But she brings a lot of the funny as well by just acting off it and playing off
She's got lines that need to be in the movie.
For sure.
Like Imbruglia, again... you're right. Like Hurley actually does have some not only important stuff in that film, like some load bearing scenes, but also like she has funny moments.
She's an actor.
It's a great performance.
Not the singer of Torn, who, by the way, she does get Nellie Brilliger's one kind of important scene where she has to nearly fuck Mr. Bean
to bring him back into the game.
That is the most. I mean, I was thinking more and more about this, and it is really insulting for an actress to be like for your agent to be like they want you to do a scene where you make fuck eyes with Mr. Bean. That's bad enough, but then like the comic premise of the scene is that you think he doesn't want to have sex with you.
Yeah, he turns you down. Which actually, we talked about it on the Love Guru episode where, is it Jessica Alba?
Yeah,
Jessica Alba gets hired basically to want to fuck Mike Myers.
Sure.
Mm. And so she spends the whole movie trying to fuck Mike Myers and he turns her down again and again and again, which is just the most insulting thing in the world.
That is.
That Mike Myers would say no to Jessica Alba. Makes no sense. But
does Austin Powers ever turn down anybody?
No, he asked people if he makes them horny.
He does turn down Vanessa in the first movie.
Oh, when she's drunk.
When she's really drunk. It's one of the really best scenes of the movie.
Oh, that is really sweet. I remember that.
Yeah, it's awesome. It shows that Austin is a better guy than Johnny English himself.
Johnny
English wouldn't do that.
He would go for it.
He was so keen to fuck her. Remember her monologue there where she's like, "It's been 3 years since my fiancé died and I haven't made love to anyone and until now I want to root you, Johnny."
And he's just jacking it. And it's that's why I don't think it was a kids movie, because he was visibly jacking it there.
You could see
his penis.
You could see saw the eye of his penis.
It did the classic Hitchcockian thing where it's not suspensive. It just blows up. You have to go underneath the table and show the bomb sticking. to build that suspense up.
Yuck. All right, so that was that.
I wonder why she's not in the second one.
I know. Well, I guess we're going to have to find out when we do Johnny English Reborn with Ben Jenkins.
We got to do the whole trilogy, baby. The new one's coming out in 2 years' time. It's given us a renewed purpose for this podcast.
How would this movie take 2 years to make? That looked like it was made in a weekend.
Well, how did any of, that's the thing we were talking about before, is that there's been 8 years between each sequel of these movies.
Who was... Like, I remember when the last one came out, I was like, what the fuck? Yeah. Who wanted this movie to happen?
Well, like I said to you, it's like Richard Linklater films, you know? Yeah. It's like you wait 8 years, you do another, you reunite the team again.
Bring him back.
It's like watching the aging process, the process of time. It's actually very Texan and very cool.
You love Texas.
I
love
Texas. I'm looking forward to seeing Johnny English 20 years on. That's what it's going to be, 20, over 20 years.
But it's odd to me. Do you think that this is part of Purvis and Wade's contract of Bond, that they get to, like, we want to do a spoof just to let our steam out every now and then?
I did consider that, because that's one of the only things that makes sense to me.
Well, did they write the sequel? Let me have a look.
Have a look. Type in Johnny English Reborn into Google.
It really doesn't look like they did.
Okay.
They wrote Johnny English, obviously.
Who's the bad guy in Johnny English 2? I'd like to know this.
Let's find out. Johnny English Reborn, 2011.
Just read the cast and we'll work out who's the bad guy in that.
Okay. All right, here's the cast. Rowan Atkinson.
It's not him. He'll be playing Johnny English.
Unless he's doing double duty.
Gillian Anderson.
Oh, that's a contender. Okay. That actually could be a contender.
Dominic West.
Oh, it's Dominic West.
Yeah, it's Dominic West.
It's definitely Dominic West.
Yeah.
And then Rosamund Pike.
Rosamund Pike. She's in James Bond, Die Another Day.
So this was not written by... Purvis and Wade.
What's its Rotten Tomatoes?
If it's higher, I'm going to freak the fuck out.
Oh, wow. Critical response was mixed. 39%.
It's
a little higher, but it's in the same range.
This was a story by William Davies. So that guy's returned.
Wow, he's back.
Yeah. That'll be really interesting. Oh my God, I can't. No. I was about to say it would be really interesting to compare, but I don't want to do that.
I'm very excited to see Johnny English 3. I can't believe it. We're finally getting close.
What do you think
series.
It's going to be called? Johnny English the 3rd? Also, by the way, we did say there was a moment when we realized Johnny English is a shit name for this character. When we heard it said in Natalie Imbruglia's thick Australian accent.
It's Johnny English. Like, this is not a spy's name.
It's a placeholder, right?
Yeah.
It seems
like it's
to
definitely
be.
Like, it's like Johnny English, but not as stupid as that.
And not like, that, but.
Yeah. And then it's like that person, like hard cuts to them sitting in the premiere being like, fuck me.
Call him something like, you know, Damien Croft or something like that. Unless it's because Johnny doesn't sound like an English name unless it's like, Johnny.
It's kind of
Johnny
playing on James, right? Like, yeah. But if it's playing on James, Jimmy English would make.
Or Jonathan English.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what Grimsby's name was. Jonathan Wass.
Isn't it Grimsby?
Yeah, it's Alan Grimsby.
No, it's not.
Graham Grimsby.
It is Grimsby's name.
It's Sacha Baron
Cohen. Why am I so obsessed with Grimsby? Grimsby's name... Okay, so the character's name is not Grimsby.
Yeah.
That's
really?
The town that they live in.
Yeah.
Oh,
the brothers,
but
yeah.
We keep calling him Grimsby because we can't remember his name. His name is Nobby Butcher. But the Mark Strong character, as in like the Bond, Bourne type character in that, is named Sebastian Graves, which is very appropriate.
That's good.
That's a good spy. Shit.
And he's MI6 as well.
Well, they said MI7,
yes,
which is
so
not a thing.
Either it's a higher echelon or
MI6
they
was
didn't
like,
get the rights
we would really
to
rather
MI6.
You not.
What's Bond? Is he MI6?
MI6, yeah.
Because Fleming was MI6.
Mm. And is MI5 the real one?
No, MI5 is... MI6 and MI5 are real.
Okay.
MI5 is territory, like, a national.
Right,
it's like
right.
difference between the CIA... No, okay. Not really, but CIA and FBI. Like it's,
and is it true that MI stands for Mission Impossible?
It is.
Okay, cool. Cool, I get it now.
That was the other thing. You pointed this out really early on, or maybe halfway through, where you were like, this isn't a Bond parody, this is a Mission Impossible parody.
Totally. They're like scaling buildings, they're hacking into mainframes.
Yeah.
It's just a mishmash of spy genres, but it doesn't commit to any of them, which is why it doesn't work and why Austin Powers does.
Now, I'm giving it 9 out of 10.
Okay.
fair enough.
Absolutely. I'm going to give it the same. I loved it. I can't wait for the next two.
I'm actually going to go right ahead and give it a 9 out of 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Shaman had to lose that point, but as we did say, there were some problems.
Yeah, there were some things that were boring and not funny and the same shit over and over again. So we can't get perfect.
That is why it has lost that one point.
Ben, thank you so much for joining us here today on Hoof It Around the Bee.
It was an absolute conglomerate ordeal.
It was very inconvenient for you, and thank you so much. Is there anything you'd like to plug? Obviously, your podcast.
Me and Michael Hing, who's been on this show before.
Yes, oh, yeah. He's done our iconic gold member double episode.
Good. Me and him do a podcast called Freedom of a Good Home. I also do a podcast called Dragon Friends,
mm-hmm.
Which is a live D&D comedy show.
Fantastic.
So you can check both of those out.
Awesome. Fuck yeah. What else? Anything else you got coming up in the works, in the pipes? Don't climb up the pipes, though, because often there are 10 men shitting at the top of them.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
Excellent. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
On doing a shit with your mates. We have got our screening of Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery, for the 20th anniversary, happening next Wednesday night at the Golden Age Cinema at August 16th.
August 16th at 8:30 p.m. prime time. We're ready for prime time.
We finally made it prime time,
come
babies.
To that.
Yes.
I reckon you should.
Ben
we'll
Jenkins
put you on
is
going to
be there. Yeah. We'll put you on our list of most beautiful boys.
You can buy a ticket.
Where can people find you online?
They can find me at Ben C. Jenkins on Twitter.
Excellent.
You can email me at alexi@rickmail.com. You can find me on Twitter at This Is Alexi. You're on Twitter at I Am Cameron James.
That's right. And you can talk to us at Mike Check Pod.
On Twitter.
On Twitter or on Facebook at Mike Check with Cameron James and Alexi Toliopoulos. And give us... You know what? Go on iTunes, and I double dare you to give us 5 stars.
Oh,
and
they won't
there,
do it. They're cowards.
I reckon they should do it.
I mean, they should, but I don't think they will.
Well, we'll see.
All right.
And while you're there, guys, why don't you give us the name of another super specific actor-based spin-off podcast, much like Hooking Around the Bean, and we'll do one for you. Ben, what kind of actor-based spin-off would you like to see us do?
Do you know what? I was talking to, I think, Alexi Toliopoulos mm-hmm. at the pub the other day about this.
That's me.
I would like a podcast dealing with mm-hmm. the career of Kenneth Branagh would be very interesting.
And what would we call it?
You would call it...
10 out of 10.
Yes! You would absolutely call it that! Because if there's one person in the world called Kenneth who would despise being called Ken, it's Sir Kenneth Branagh. Oh, 10 out of 10!
That's really good.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining
thank
us.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll see you very soon, baby.
And we wish you all a good morrow.
It's my check! It's my check! The podcast!
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.